This is Drilling Insight, where we talk about ideas and issues that affect the drilling and groundwater industries. I'm Jeremy Verduzco, host and editor of The Driller. With me is co-host and drilling expert, Brock Yorty. What's good, Brock?
You know what? It's great because it's warming up here in the Midwest, but I think at the same time, the time this podcast drops, it'll be frost laws. And all of our guys ramping to go are going to be pulled back, or they got prepared and, they put the extra set of tires and got the right permits to be able to get to jobs.
Okay. Well, we're grateful for the thought, even though it can complicate some things. But so on today's show, we have Dave Schulenberg. Thanks for being on the show, Dave. We do appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So Dave is the director of partner states for the National Groundwater Association. So that's kind of a fancy way of saying he juggles running six state groundwater associations, including California, Michigan, Illinois, and others. So we brought him on to talk about how he brings all of these things together and, keeps it all straight and serves everyone in the process. So let's start with our usual opening question. Dave, did you choose this industry or did it choose you?
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy and Brock. This industry kind of chose me. I graduated college with a history degree and absolutely did nothing with it. I worked in customer service with a local One Call where I live, kind of helping out there for almost 10 years. And then went to a couple of other industries, but focused in that customer service. And through a series of other things that happened in life, I ended up working for an association management company here in the Twin Cities. One of their clients was the Minnesota Water Well Association, and I have been with them for 20 years now. So along with California, Michigan, Illinois, I am also the executive director for the Minnesota Water Well Association, the Montana Water Well Drillers Association, and the Kentucky Groundwater Association.
That just gets me into my question, Dave. What is it like managing being the director of groundwater associations from the Midwest to the West Coast?
It's great. I actually really enjoy doing this. I really do. There is never a dull moment. And every day, every week, I am learning something new about this industry. You can't just sit and become complacent and think, I'm going to do it this way in this state, so it's going to go that way through every other state. Because what's applicable in, say, Michigan or Minnesota, a part of it may work in California or Montana, but it won't work in Kentucky. And you can throw that construct around and however you want to do it with those names. A big thing that is a challenge is when you're dealing with water law. You know, two of the six states are first in time, first in right, Montana and California. The rest of them are pretty much riparian use with limited use. I can't remember the exact name of it, but basically you own the water under your property as long as it doesn't interfere with your neighbor's withdrawal type of thing. And so that can at times pose a challenge, as well as working with six different state capitals, lobbyists, bills, tracking, and things like that. So Microsoft Outlook calendar feature has become a good friend. And I have a great support staff too with the National Groundwater Association. Partnering with them and being part of this program really adds that extra layer of professionalism to each of the states. My staff and I work hard every day to make sure that we cover everything from the basics of membership cards and membership dues processing to education offerings, the printing of newsletters and other such things that really enhance the member experience throughout the states.
So you talked a little bit touched on regulation and policies and things like that. Let's look at training. So you serve six states. Each of them has different training needs. What works in the Great Lakes might not work in California, might not work in Kentucky. So what are your strategies for building events with that in mind?
Working with the committees in each of the states that focus on their own education or training events, not only with the committees, but also just doing outreach to the members. What is it that your employees need to know about? I mean, you can always put together 4 or 5 hours for education points on screens, pumps, mud, welding, and OSHA. You know, boom, boom, boom. And it's just, you come in, you do it, you go home. But what you need to do also is you need to start incorporating other classes that focus on increasing business acumen. What are you talking about with succession planning? What are you talking about your exit strategy? Yes, you can talk about OSHA updates and see all of the Darwin Awards that came out for the previous year, but what is it that you're focusing on in your own trench that keeps you and your company safe? Are you properly insured? So that it really starts to get to these types of things where I interact with my committees and say, okay, yes, we can do mud, pumps, welding, and grouting, but let's stretch it out. Let's talk about emerging contaminants. Well, we don't have to worry about it. You know, we don't have to worry about PFAS in Idaho. Well, when they start finding it, you will, because you might be working it.
When they start finding it, yeah.
That's right. You know, there's a great quote that's out there that says the only places we're not finding PFAS is the places we're not looking. So, you know, you have to start increasing those types of interactions with your members and non-members that come to really drive it away from I'm here to get my points and I'm going to go home to I'm here, I can get my points, I can learn a couple of new things, and I can talk to my vendors and learn new things from them too. That's a great relationship that has to always be remembered too, is, you know, the members, yes, they already know their Pentairs and Wyobens and things like that, but what can they learn in that 2, 3, 4 hours of vendor time that they didn't realize they needed to catch or they didn't catch at a session type of thing. So really we're using some of the same ideas state to state, but realize that, you know, we're not going to do one on well destruction that is applicable in California because you deal with well destruction a different way in Kentucky.
You've been in this role for a while now. How has serving members changed in that time? What are the new expectations? How have they changed?
The increased use of social media and electronic media, just the use of, you know, electronics. You can get everything you need from a cell phone, you know? And so what is the role of the association? There's a number of them that still want to have the paper copy of the newsletter to put wherever, to throw in the truck and to use. Old school. You've got a number of members that want to, you know, that when they're not drilling, they're on their phone and they're working on their phone. Everything comes through the phone. So we have to take a look at how do we best serve that. So some of the states have electronic newsletter only or an electronic paper copy option. That's one way. We have to start looking at what the virtual world will offer us and how we have to address that. The last 2 years have been really instrumental in driving that fact home that, look, if we can't meet in person, the states aren't going to just waive their legislation because they can't do it that way either. But they might be flexible to say for a year, you can get your CEs virtual and we'll work on it. So the partner states have worked with NGWA as well as their own licensing departments within each state to say, how can we continue to provide education and opportunities for learning for CEs that is accepted by the states, that isn't just a sales pitch from, I'll pick on Baroid, you know, that kind of thing. Baroid does one and it's a sales pitch. No, it has to be very still by the same rules as if we were in line. So, I mean, those are a couple of challenges of things that, you know, the members are looking for, as well as what we need to do to keep us forward looking and forward thinking.
So let's talk a little bit about networking, the events that you put on, it's not just vendors and, you know, or demos or CEUs, whatever. There's also a social component where people connect, and those connections can help build business. So how do you foster that kind of connection at your events?
At the events, we take a look at the timing of it. Not only the overall number of days we have, but within there, how much is dedicated to education, how much is dedicated to straight vendor time, how much is dedicated to a banquet afterwards if we want to do some entertainment. Some of the states have entertainment afterwards where members can sit in a non-competitive type of light. They can sit next to each other in a, you know, dueling pianos or a poker night or something like that, and really just relax over a couple of drinks and talk, whether it's one-on-one with a competitor or a fellow member, or one-on-one with a vendor that they want to know more about, and really just provide that opportunity. So the way we've laid out a number of our events offer that on both the beginning part of it as well as the end part of it, you know, throughout the whole event, really trying to foster that we're all better together. We really are.
Okay, since we're all better together, and I'm drinking out of my glass that says that right now with some good Michigan groundwater. Dave, you have six association. Who's throwing the best opening or closing party?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot, aren't you? Minnesota.
It's Michigan, right? It's Michigan, right?
Sure. No, I'm not going to. I can't play favorites. We each have a great opportunity. Minnesota, I'll kind of speak to each one. Minnesota just celebrated their 100th anniversary. So Minnesota is the second oldest association focused on water well drilling in the country. Just, we're at 100 years this year. So we ended up getting a proclamation from the governor celebrating that the last Monday of January, I believe it was the Minnesota Water Well Association Day. We have a poker night, a casino night at the end, where we have items that are donated by vendors and raffled off to winners. And that goes 3-4 hours, and it grows every year. So it's a great opportunity for that interaction. A number of the associations have kind of a social hour before the opening day. So if it opens on a Thursday, Wednesday night, we'll have 3-4 hours of bar time, as well as some appetizers, that allows for vendors to come in and not feel they have to take half a dozen people off site to a bar, pay for it that way. Why not help support it, donate to that event, stay with us, and maybe get a couple of new customers, maybe help share some of that camaraderie. And so really we're taking a look at what is it that we can provide socially. California does an auction. Montana does a great auction after their banquet. And Kentucky had a very successful auction after their banquet when they announced a change in their scholarship name, honoring Susie and Doris Givens. Scholarship is now the Susie and Doris Givens Memorial Scholarship. So it's a great honor for that association. They raised a lot of money to help support future scholarship winners. And so, you know, Michigan does a great social network as well with it. They have fun off auctioning off a screen lamp that is donated by Johnson Screens, made a nice looking lamp. And so every year we auction that off and have a great time with it. I would just say every one of them has something that's very fun and is different, really.
And you got everyone right. You're not playing any favorites, right?
No, I can't play any favorites with it. We all have a great time, no matter.
Okay, just wanted to make sure you mentioned everybody.
Yep,
that was your easy question, Dave. So, what is one thing that state associations don't think about yet is critical to the success of the membership? You know, we have our egos. We have an idea. We have a long running of what we believe our state association should be. This is your moment to pull the curtain back and say what you think.
Drum roll. There's a couple of things. One, we have to remember we're part of a bigger audience now. 40 years ago, Michigan was Michigan. What happens in Michigan is kind of like Vegas. What happened to Michigan, stayed in Michigan, we focus on Michigan. Same with the other states. We're no longer solely isolated like that anymore. Bylaws have been changed to incorporate social media, because gone are the days where somebody from the UP will come down to Lansing to the convention, gather all the news, then go back up to the UP and tell everybody what's going on. By that time, three different things have happened and changed, and you've got it on your phone now. So it's getting that message across that it's not just state or local issues, it's national issues. The other thing that, you know, really focuses on, you know, we've got an aging membership. And we'll probably touch on this in a little bit, maybe, but with that aging membership, we've got to look at how do we get new people in? How do we continue to grow that association? Offering benefits, changing the way we did it. Change is hard for a driller. They hate change. Drillers hate change. And I've told many people this, that if a driller got a tattoo, it would be, "I hate change." That would be the tattoo of their choice. But things have to change. Gone are the days when Brock does things the way Brock's grandpa did it. Because Brock knows better. You have to realize that you have to make that change to be more successful, to be safer, to get more clients, etc. So getting that change across, you don't just do it, boom, here it is, accept it. It's, here's the idea, here's why we're doing it. Let's talk together, and then we're going to implement this change. Takes a little bit of time, but you have to do it that way because then it's non-threatening. You threaten the drillers, it's like, nope, I'm done. Goodbye. Not going to talk to you anymore. So
that kind of feeds into my next question. And you know, you've emphasized how much drillers and, you know, to be fair, a lot of people don't like change. But when you look around at how state shows are operated or hosted, what changes would you make? I mean, I know you run a bunch of them, but as you look around the landscape, what do you think needs to improve?
I think image. And I want to say image because they're not drillers. You're no longer diggers. They haven't been diggers for a long time, but you're not even drillers. You're groundwater professionals. Every member of an association, whether you're on the technical scientist, manufacturer, supplier, or contractor side, you're all groundwater professionals. Think of what you have to know. You have to know regulation, hydrology, geology, electrics, electricians, plumbing, codes, regulations, CEs, bonding, insurance, running an office. You just don't go out and go, hey, pull the lever, put the hole in the ground, off I go. That's a driller. That's image change that has to happen inside our industry, nationwide, east to west, north to south. It also has to happen outside our industry at each of the 50 state capitals with your elected officials. If you watch a hearing, a committee hearing that's talking to a professional about a water issue, oftentimes that professional, if they're there to testify, you can tell by the way that the elected officials talk, they don't know who they're talking to. They don't know what the industry does or how we do it. What they still see mentally is somebody in bib overalls covered in mud holding a shovel, when these are certified licensed professionals that oftentimes serve on a state or a national board, yet they're looked upon to say, well, agency over here says we have to do it this way. So we have to change that image of who we are professionally across the country and try and get that to these elected officials, to agency members. So we're seen as the professional and not some guy who just wants to go out and ban nitrates in his area because it's polluting his shallow well.
I like the discussion about community and fully understand, and I'm appreciative to get to come and participate at your state shows with all of our colleagues. They're always fantastic. What do you think about joint collaborative shows? Like, New England or the Jubilee or Mountain States?
Yeah, Mountain States. There's New England, Jubilee, Mountain States, and the Pacific Northwest are the four that come to mind with that. And Mountain States, Jubilee, I think New England are all yearly. Pacific Northwest is bi-yearly. There's been talk, you know, and I look behind you, Brock, at your image. You know, Michigan, do you want to do one with, was that Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan together? What about Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin? There's been talk about that. Sometimes you get a combined show between the water well industry and the on-site sewage treatment or the rural water type of thing. It boils down for me to logistics. If we were to do a multi-regional show, the logistics become difficult in those that need CEs, those that need to get paid, who's going to take the brunt of it, who's going to do it type of thing. So really what you have to do is have an association or a group that leads that. Jubilee, New England, Mountain States all have that small association that can dedicate staff time to that. Pacific Northwest uses NGWA. But if, you know, let's go with Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, if they were going to do one, who's going to take the logistics on to plan one of those? Because each of those three states have their own staff dedicated to their own state. So that becomes part of it. You know, more people came from Colorado than Utah and Wyoming. Who gets the brunt of it? Do you share it three ways or that? Each one has different CE needs. How do you deal with that? So really for a volunteer association that, you know, somebody's secretary or they have a small paid staff, it can become very difficult for it. Will we ever see the big shows like we used to see with all the iron and everything? Possibly at a multi-state event like that. But then realize you're talking about timing. When do you want to do it? Up in our neck of the woods, February would be a great time because nobody's doing anything because it's so cold. But you can't get a whole lot of rigs brought up to Minneapolis in the wintertime or Lansing in the wintertime. And everybody go in and out and in and out. So do you compete with these other regional shows or the national show? And what's your draw? So, I mean, a lot has to go into thinking that and working that through.
Well, and that was my next question, you know, getting back to those big shows like we had in the 90s and being a manufacturer at a time and, you know, being a professional in this industry and stuff, I know the expense. I also know for the regional men and women that go to these shows, suddenly, you know, they're consumed for weeks at a time. You know, we have great professionals. It'd be great to see some of the gurus being able to make it to a more centralized place and be able to share a bigger story, but they suddenly have to pick and choose between going to the Virginia show or going to the Michigan show or, you know, that type of stuff.
And I haven't fully analyzed it yet, but I think COVID has also played a role in how vendors are looking at state shows as well. I'm hoping that goes away with 23, 24, et cetera, and that we can get back to at least some pre-COVID normalization with our attendance with, you know, from vendors and things like that. The contractors all loved being back together this year. I did 5 shows in 4 weeks for five of the 6 states. And it was great to see all of these people together enjoying the time. But I did notice that the vendors, I didn't see some that I normally see at some of the shows. I didn't have a full floor of vendors as I did in other states or other times. But I also know that some of these vendors, companies, were getting back into the swing of things, being able to hold an in-person meeting. So they were doing staff training days or safety days or whatever, so they could get back up and fully running. A couple of them still had, at the time of early February, travel restrictions because of the Omicron variant. So will the big shows of the 90s come back? I don't think so. I, you know, unless something drastically changes. You know, Versadrill doesn't have 10 rigs sitting out that they can just come up and show. Somebody buys one at that time and it's ready for delivery. Yeah, there's a good possibility they'll come up, show it, and deliver it. But, you know, it's easier to pack everything up on your shoulder and walk in, walk out, set it up, than bringing a multi-million dollar rig across state lines in February, cleaning it, and then driving it back when nobody says it works. It works in Vegas. It works at National. That's the industry show right there. Statewide, you're talking about the relationships between Brock and somebody, between Baroid and somebody, Wyoben and somebody, Pentair and somebody, those customers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're making trade-offs. So I have one last question, unless Brock has anything else. But say, you know, I'm up and coming in this industry. I'm in my 20s, whatever. I'm putting in the work, but I don't belong to my state association. So what's the positive case in 2022? Like, what's your pitch for young people or anyone that isn't a member of the organization and probably should be?
Gone are the days when the second generation does it because their mom and dad were in it. Well, why are you a member of the association? Well, mom and dad were, so I am. Those days are gone. It's a couple of things. One, there are added benefits to being a member that a non-member won't get. So some associations may offer additional insurance. You know, you're a member of the association, we'll give you $20,000 of AD&D type of thing. Just by being a member, you qualify for that. Others will use industry-related support that they have within their state and say, look, as a member of, for example, CGA, you now have the ability to call up the attorney that we partner with and talk about groundwater law if you have a case, you know, for probably a discount or something like that. You partner with the insurance company that the association works with, will get you a little bit of a, you know, something type of thing. You may have an extra inside benefit to it. And I don't want to get into verbiage and language that'll get me in trouble, but I think you understand what I'm saying with you're utilizing some of those member benefits of the association. The other important thing, as I've alluded to earlier, is a voice at each of those state capitals. You can either become complacent and have state agencies dictate what is going to happen to this industry, or be a groundwater professional and be part of a larger voice and stand up and say, we know what we're doing. We're licensed, we're certified, we're educated. We would like to work with you on this bill. We want to reach out to natural resources or whoever oversees this part of the industry and say, this is what we know. A quick example is here in my backyard neighborhood. We had discussions relating to PFAS and putting in long pipe to service a community. Without having a voice of the industry on some of these committees, it would have happened. However, the professional voice that we had has worked in this area so long, he stood up and he said, you can't put the pipe from A to B because where it crosses right here, the bedrock is about 2 feet below surface. And none of these people that were thinking about that realized that. So you have to continue to be a voice, local, state levels, about our industry. It's imperative.
Well, and we're always encouraged to see anyone step up and take an active role. And, you know, a lot of these things are volunteer or, you know, serving on committees and things like that. But it's important work, and it's work that needs to get done.
It is, and that's where the role of the association continues to help, is being that voice for the members. But oftentimes, you have to have the members step up and be the voice of the association, too. It's very important, yeah.
Okay, well, with that, we will wrap up today's episode. So thanks again, Dave. You know, I'm fascinated by what you said earlier about putting in kind of non-drilling related business and education offerings in your events, because I think that's super important. And one thing that I have seen is, you know, there's a need for that kind of business savvy in this space. People are so busy, you know, they're running the equipment, they're trying to keep track of all their safety, they're trying to, you know, run a business, that they need all the help that they can get. And it's some of those other kind of skills that get put on the back burner.
Right. And it also opens up an ancillary outlet, because you can start looking at the individuals who deal with social media, cybersecurity, et cetera. One thing that'll shut down a well drilling company faster than a state agency is being hacked. And if you don't have the right systems in place or partner with somebody, you're done. You're shut down for a day. And how much money does that now cost that company for being down for a day or two, or to try and get back up, or to deal with ransomware? And so through the association, looking at offering those types of classes, yes, you may not get a CE for it, but oh my God, you learn something. That's even better, because you learn how to be a better businessman, to be a better groundwater professional.
Well, so what are your thoughts, Brock?
I completely agree. We're great drillers, and businessmen was not something that you learn in the field, and we've been that way. And I've been appreciative to be able to pitch class ideas to Dave and other associations, that they go, yeah, you want to teach applying tribal field knowledge to an engineered specification, or why aren't we able to recruit Gen Z? And I've been appreciative that this platform with the driller has supported me, as I've not been a manufacturer or part of the family business anymore. You know, suddenly it's, I want to be there because of the camaraderie and I have all these great friends, but my big kid job's like, wait, why are you going on vacation this week? You know, so it's a fun dance. And I thank Dave for that and the driller for helping me out.
My pleasure.
Well, thanks again, Dave. Where can the audience find out more about you?
They can contact me directly through email at dschulenberg@ngwa.org, or get a hold of me through NGWA's phone line too. But really the email is the best way. I've got this thing on me, like you guys do, I'm sure, almost 24/7. So if I don't get back right away, it'll be first thing in the morning normally.
Yeah, great. Well, you can find fresh episodes of our show on our website or on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Search Drilling Insight and hit that subscribe button, folks. And don't forget to visit thedriller.com for the latest industry news and views. And follow us on the usual social media channels. So until next time, this is Drilling Insight. Thanks.